the Ahson Institute for Political Studies tells VOA there is fundamentally one issue the international community should focus on at the summit.
Which is whether Kim Jong-un himself is really willing to give up nuclear weapons.
The third inter-Korean summit will end on Thursday.
That was VOA's Steve Miller reporting from South Korea. President Trump imposed tariffs on additional $200 billion worth of tariffs Chinese goods coming into the U.S., continuing an ongoing trade war between the two countries. The new import taxes begin next week, will rise to 25% at the end of 2018. The latest U.S. move could generate a tit-for-tat response from Beijing, which has said it would welcome new trade talks with Washington, but also suggested would not engage in more negotiations if the U.S. imposed the tariffs. What is left of Tropical Storm Florence is soaking the mid-Atlantic region of the United States with rains as it drifts toward the northeastern part of the country, leaving death and destruction behind in the state of North Carolina. Flash flood watches and warnings are posted from southern Virginia to Vermont and New Hampshire through Tuesday. At least 32 deaths are blamed on the storm. The White House said President Trump would visit the storm-ravaged region in the coming days, but only after it's determined his arrival would not disrupt continuing rescue and recovery efforts. Annual rainy season flooding in Nigeria has killed more than 100 people. Conditions are reportedly especially dangerous in the city of Lokoja, where the Benue and Niger rivers come together. Floods in the Lokoja region in 2012 killed more than 350 people and destroyed farms and other property there. Environmentalists blamed the annual floods in part on what they say is the Nigerian government's failure to invest in infrastructure, including drainage systems and properly maintaining existing ones. President Trump has ordered the Justice Department to declassify a trove of documents related to the investigation into Russian election meddling. The White House spokesperson said the information to be made public includes FBI surveillance warrants of former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page and reports of FBI interviews with Bruce Orr. The spokeswoman says Trump ordered the documents declassified at the request of a number of committees of Congress and the reasons of transparency. California Congressman Adam Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, says Trump is trying to undermine the probe. The Commission of Inquiry in Burundi says it's worried about the persistent and widespread violations of human rights in Burundi, some of which it says are crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva that the Commission has presented its final report on the situation in Burundi to the UN Human Rights Council.
The Commission accuses members of the National Intelligence Service, including senior officials and the police, of serious violations. It also expresses concern by the growing role played by the youth militia, the Imbonerakure, in controlling the population. The government of Burundi has refused to cooperate with the Commission, declaring its members persona non grata. The Commission has collected more than 400 testimonies from victims and witnesses in neighboring countries, as well as remotely from Burundians residing in the country.
That was VOA's Lisa Schlein reporting. The Trump administration is drastically cutting the number of refugees it lets into the country. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced on Monday that just 30,000 refugees will be allowed into the United States in 2019. The lowest number admitted since the program was established in 1980. Pompeo cited national security as the main reason behind the reduction, saying the system did not allow to properly vet the refugees for possible ties to terrorism. During President Barack Obama's last year in office, nearly 85,000 refugees were admitted. For more news, log on to voanews.com or VOA's mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati, Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Who brought containers and bags of millions of dollars into Liberia without the knowledge of the government?
The government of Liberia has launched an investigation upon the directive of the president after he got information that containers of money along with bags of money are being brought into the country through the freeport of Monrovia and through the Robert International Airport.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Information Minister. Sierra Leone's free education policy went into effect on Monday. The new U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe hopes the country returns soon to being the powerhouse it once was. And South Sudan's President Salva Kiir calls Riek Machar amid reports of continuing ceasefire violations.
It was my initiative to call him and see why is he still fighting us when we have signed the agreement. I told him, I don't want us to go back to war again.
Portuguese Prime Minister Antonio Costa is on a two-day visit to Angola. And what caused the death of 12 newborn babies at Punwani Hospital in Nairobi? Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian government has launched an investigation into how containers and bags of millions of dollars were brought into the country between November 2017 and August 2018 without the knowledge of the George Weah government. Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says preliminary investigation has revealed that $16 billion Liberian dollars, or about $104 million U.S. dollars, have been brought into the country. Nambwe said the money entered the country before George Weah was inaugurated, and his government was never made aware by the outgoing Ellen Johnson Sirleaf government.
In November of 2017, we have confirmation and evidence that a batch of banknotes came into the country. It happened again just before the president took office as president of Liberia, and it continued up to March. Now, when the president received information about the inflow of these newly printed, newly minted banknotes, he commissioned an investigation which has been chaired by the Ministry of Justice and the Financial Intelligence Unit and other security apparatus. The idea is to understand how much money came into the country, how much was ordered, how much was printed, which countries they were printed in, and how did this affect the foreign exchange situation in our countries. And I can assure you that, you know, at some point during this investigation, we'll call people in, people will be arrested, they will be indicted.
Tell me, Minister, who has the right or the authority to print and bring money into the country? The Liberian government or somebody else?
Well, when you say the Liberian government, you have to realize that we had a situation, you know, a unique situation where one democratically elected government was taken over from another democratically elected government. So there was a transition. Now, before the transition happened, the orders were already placed in by the government of Liberia. But because we had a new president, one would have thought that this new president would have been informed about all of these transactions during the transition notes that were presented to him and the transition meeting and would have been part of the handover notes. But he was not aware. But I must say, under our laws, the national legislature grants authority to the Central Bank of Liberia to print notes. Now, but in this case, you know, it was like a carte blanche, you know. So people just started printing money, bringing money into the country. The object of this investigation is to ensure that we find out how much was printed, how much was brought into the country. Already, the investigation has uncovered that the bank notes were not printed only in one country. Some were printed in Sweden, some in Lebanon, some in China.
So what sort of money are we talking about? Are we talking about Liberian dollars or U.S. dollars?
Well, the information is that mostly Liberian dollars, but who could say that, you know, some of the United States dollars that were coming into the country to be infused into the market were not also brought under cloudy circumstances. People are saying 9 billion, but already we've confirmed that over 15 billion Liberian dollars have been brought in. But we are trying to find out how much was printed. We want to see the delivery notes, want to see the contracts between the printers and the government of Liberia. So it's a comprehensive investigation, and those who would be deemed culpable would be brought to book.
Can you clarify some of the speculation that's been reported in some of the local media there about the exact amount of the money? Some reports suggest 9 billion Liberian dollars or maybe $60 million U.S.
We can confirm that the monies were brought in through the Freeport of Liberia and through the RIA. For now, it's around 60 billion Liberian dollars that we have confirmed. Approximately 16 billion Liberian dollars.
Did you say 1.6 billion or 1.5 billion Liberian dollars?
an estimate of a little bit over 15 billion Liberian dollars, almost 16. That's how far we've confirmed from the ongoing investigation as of today. And the monies came in through the two ports of entry, the Freeport of Liberia and the RIA.
Minister, could it be that this money might have had some impact on the circulation of currency in the economy there?
Definitely, it must have had, because if you remember, you know, in 2016 and up to 2017, the total amount of Liberian dollars in circulation was estimated by the central bank at around 6 billion Liberian dollars. So to double that amount from 6 to 7 billion up to 15 billion must have had a very serious rippling effect on the economy.
Minister Nambwe, thank you very much again. We shall follow this story, a very strange phenomena.
Thanks a lot.
Eugene Nambwe is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Sierra Leone's government on Monday officially began its free universal education program. Local media reported that parents seemed happy with the new policy, which fulfills a key electoral promise of President Julius Mada Bio. Meanwhile, some teachers and school authorities in the capital, Freetown, say they had not yet received the teaching materials needed to implement the policy. Information Minister Mohamed Souare tells viewers Peter Clotty that the government is working to mitigate all concerns about the expansion.
If we walk down the streets across the country today, because we dispatch monitors throughout to get out our development partners, it's been a very, very, very interesting moment to behold. Parents have been making calls on public telephone lines to express their appreciation to this long-awaited manifesto commitment.
Well, I understand from the feedback I'm getting from Sierra Leone that parents appreciate this. However, I heard also that some teachers and some school authorities are complaining of not receiving teaching and learning materials, particularly in Freetown. How are you addressing this concern?
Well, I am not particularly okay with challenges in Freetown. Remember, this is a new program. There are bound to be teaching challenges. But the good news is we have the school inspectorate division. We have teams dispersed throughout the country to be able to take note of those challenges with a view to addressing them as soon as possible.
There is also the issue of unprecedented entry of new admissions across the country. Is the government prepared for these new students?
The government is very prepared. When President Bio mentioned the launch of free quality education, he did not lose sight of the fact that this will bring more pupils into the school system. It will increase their enrollment, and therefore some special provision was made to cater to the needs of those who will be re-entering the school system or those who for the first time will be darkening the walls of the school system. But by and large, a lot of school structures are being built. Our manifesto commitment, when we campaigned to promote his presidency, we had made a manifesto commitment that within the first 3 years, all schools will return to the one school system of schooling. At the moment, a lot of schools are being built with support from our development partners. So yes, this is something we envisage, and we are working very hard to ensure that no Sierra Leonean child is left behind because of infrastructure or because of the cost that the opposition has been making people believe.
How sustainable is this new policy?
President Bio has an unflinching commitment to the sustenance of the free quality education. In the first time in our country's 57 years history, we have allocated 21% of our country's national budget to the free quality education. This is in itself novel, and that we are committed to sustaining that all the way. We have also launched a multi-donor trust fund to ensure that our development partners and other Sierra Leoneans of goodwill contribute generously to the sustenance of the free education. As a demonstration of his commitment to the sustenance of the free education program, President Bio himself donated about 3 months of his salary. Other ministers did same, and the private sector is also very, very, very heartened by the initiative, and they are stopping at nothing to make meaningful contributions to the program.
Mohamed Souare is the Minister of Information of Sierra Leone. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 18th. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir says he called rebel leader Riek Machar to urge him to pull back his troops after reports of fighting in parts of Ye River State. As my young David Mayar reports from Juba, President Kiir told a church congregation that he asked the chairman of the SPLAIO to order his forces not to attack government troops for the sake of peace.
Speaking at a memorial service for the 20 victims of last week's plane crash in Yirrul of Eastern Lagos State, Mr. Kir said, for the past 3 days, government and SPLA-IO forces have been fighting in parts of Yei River State. He told the congregation at All Saint Cathedral in Juba that during today's phone conversation with Machar, he asked the chairman of the SPLA-IO to order his forces not to attack government troops for the sake of peace.
It was my initiative to call him and see why is he still fighting us when we have signed the agreement. I told him, what is this? Is it the acquisition of more territory? But we have signed the agreement. I don't want us to go back to war again. So you talk to your commanders in the field so that they don't attack us again.
Kir, Machar, and the leaders of other parties signed what they call a final revitalized 2017 peace agreement in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa last week. The president says the peace deal marks the end of 5 years of civil war.
I want to personally assure you that the agreement we have just signed has ended the war. Your suffering provided the primary motivation for this government to pursue peace by all means necessary.
President Kir is calling on the South Sudanese people to join the government and others in implementing the peace deal and to put their differences with other community members behind them.
I want to appeal to all of you to embrace and accept this peace agreement. You are brothers and your sisters from the opposition side, and so that we close the dark chapter on the war. By forgiving each other, we give a chance to peace and prosperity of our people and our nation.
According to the agreement, the parties are supposed to form a joint defense command, which will include soldiers from the government side as well as those from other armed groups. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
The new U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, Brian Nichols, says he looks forward to the day that Zimbabwe will return to being the powerhouse it used to be once the country embarks on a path of reviving its economy. On the removal of sanctions and the controversial Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Amendment Act of 2018, also known as ZEDERA, Ambassador Nichols says Zimbabwe has to fulfill the requirements of its 2013 constitution if the U.S. Congress and the Trump administration are to consider scrapping ZEDERA.
The U.S. policy toward Zimbabwe has a number of elements, but one of those elements is legal. And that's ZEDERA. To put it as simply as I can, if Zimbabwe fulfills the requirements of its 2013 constitution, it will meet the requirements of ZEDERA. ZEDERA covers lending by international organizations to Zimbabwe and forgiveness of the debt that Zimbabwe has to those organizations and countries in the Paris Club. The sanctions that exist are executive branch sanctions on 154 individuals and entities, and it prevents people from the United States or through the United States economic system from providing economic benefits to those people or can prevent them from traveling to the United States. So there are two different areas, but Zimbabwe's progress in building a democracy that respects the tenets of the 2013 constitution is the key thing that it needs to do.
And we saw only yesterday the U.S. saying that they will not lift sanctions against Zimbabwe until there are reforms. What kind of reforms is the U.S. looking at?
Well, there's legislation that does not comply with the 2013 constitution, POSA, AIPA, those legislations that cover the Public Order and Security Act or freedom of speech restrictions. Those are things that President Mnangagwa has said during the campaign that he was committed to repealing or revising. And I think if he were to repeal those laws in concert, obviously, with the legislature, that would be an important step in fulfilling the requirements of the legislation.
And on the health side, we know that the USA is really involved in PEPFAR, but we have a cholera epidemic currently underway in Harare and Zimbabwe. Is the U.S. going to step in and help?
Well, yes, actually, I was just visiting the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta last week and had the opportunity to discuss this issue with them. Mm-hmm. We have an excellent relationship with Zimbabwe on issues of health, and I was very impressed to hear the close coordination and work that's being done.
Brian Nichols is the new U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe. He spoke with VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Marvelous Nyahui in Washington. Portuguese Prime Minister Antonio Costa is this morning beginning the second of a two-day visit to former colony Angola. He's expected to meet President João Lourenço later today, Tuesday. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai says Prime Minister Costa is trying to put back on track Angolan-Portuguese relations after they were strained soon after President Lourenço came to power.
We must remember that in the last months, or in reality, since last year, there has been tensions in relations between Portugal and Angola due to the alleged charges on corruption to former Angola Vice President, Mr. Manuel Vicente. But after months and months of tensions, it ended last month of May when the Portuguese courts handed over the process to the Angolan courts, and in reality, this was the main problem. After solving these problems, there was a clear, open way to the strengthening of the relations between the two countries.
The Portuguese Prime Minister described the level of economic relations between Angola and Portugal as very intense. So what exactly is the level of economic relations between the two countries?
Mr. Costa, this Monday, had a meeting with a number of Portuguese businessmen with enterprises and investments in Angola, announced the increase of a credit line of $1 billion to $1.5 billion US dollars to push Portuguese exports to Angola and new investments. Meanwhile, there is still a big obstacle in economic relations because, as everybody knows, Angola is facing a severe financial and economic crisis and has asked technical support from the International Monetary Fund, which will have soon later this year talks with the Angola government. Well, on the other hand, another obstacle is that the Angola government owns huge debt to Portuguese construction companies with more $600 million.
Has the Prime Minister met yet with President Lourenço?
Not yet. So the Prime Minister will meet President Lourenço on Tuesday. But I must underline that the economic relations between Portugal and Angola are in a down moment because due to the economic and financial crisis, a number of Portuguese enterprises went out of the country, especially in the last 2 years, with a lot of Portuguese workers too. As I said before, so Angola government, according Portuguese sources, owned a debt of more than $600 million for construction Portuguese companies. And this is will be one of the main problems that both parts will discuss this Tuesday. There are a number of prospects to increase investments and, of course, Portuguese exporters. Mr. Costa already announced this Monday the increase from $1 billion to $1.5 billion of a credit line to push Portuguese exporters and, of course, for new investments in Angola.
There was a tragedy over the weekend following the football match between Premier the Augusto of Angola and TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo. What's the latest?
It was quite a sad story after the end of the match Saturday. So, in reality, five fans lost their lives because there was a huge problem to people to go out of the stadium after the end of the match. I must say that the stadium was crowded with around 50,000 fans. Of course, most Angolan, but also thousands of people of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which have a strong community living here in Luanda. So the Angolan authorities also appointed a commission to inquire what happens in the stadium. Unfortunately, it's not the first time.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. The jobs of workers at the Pumwani Hospital in Nairobi, Kenya, are at risk this morning after Nairobi Governor Mike Sonko Monday made an impromptu visit to the hospital and uncovered the bodies of 12 infants hidden in boxes. The bodies were wrapped together in polythene bags and stuffed in the boxes inside a store as opposed to a mortuary. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Health Cabinet Secretary Cecily Kariuki has ordered health regulatory agencies to investigate the death of the 12 newborns.
Health Cabinet Secretary Cecily Kariuki directed the Kenya Medical Practitioner and Dentist Board, as well as the Nursing Council of Kenya Clinical Officers Council, to give a report of their findings on the death of 12 newborn babies at the Pumwani Hospital within 24 hours. The probe follows Nairobi Governor Mike Sonko's discovery of corpses of infants stuffed in boxes during an impromptu visit to the facility on Monday. Sonko says he gave an impromptu visit to the facility after a tip from one of the staff members who sent him a photo of the corpses.
Why are you lying to me? I'm telling you this because in the morning was sent a photo showing you carrying the corpses headed to mortuary from the wards. Is this person in the photo I had not you? This is a case, but you have hidden the corpses in the paper bags. Remove all of them. I'm sure there are more you have hidden. Remove all of them from the boxes.
Governor Sonko asked the police to look into the matter and later dissolved the hospital board and suspended three senior staff. Those suspended were Superintendent Catherine Mutinda, Dr. James Kamau, the obstetrician gynecologist who was supposed to be on duty, and the administrator Zadok Angahia. Earlier, the administrator had told the governor that the hospital only lost one newborn, contrary to what had been witnessed.
Yes, sir. Here I am.
Where is the administrator? When I told you there were more than six corpses, I had information why.
Before us,
you told me there is only, you lost one. How many dead babies are this?
Why are you playing with my mind when I have more bodies here? This photo was from the ward. Why were bodies still lying in the ward for that long if you are claiming the babies died on Friday?
It is alleged that the management of hospitals shut down the machines at the maternity wing, leading to the death of the young ones. The maternity facility, run by the Nairobi City County, has been in the news recently for all the wrong reasons. In the past, it made headlines over theft of babies, alleged negligence, poor services and mistreatment of women in labor. Kenyans are waiting to see if any of the accused would be found guilty when the findings of probe are finally made known today, Tuesday. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
And that's it for this Tuesday, September 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, saying have a productive day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.